Bombs away, everybody. I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, head out of the Del Real here with my partner, Mr. Nick Hodge, who's also an investor, just celebrated a birthday, and is the publisher of Daily Profit Cycle, amongst other titles and hats that the gentleman wears. This is the 345th episode, I can't believe that, of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. We're going to talk markets, we're going to talk silver, we're going to talk Jerome, JP Morgan, what we're investing in, one of the most attractive uranium private placements that we've had in quite some time that we will be bringing to subscribers of Private Placement Intel. There's a lot going on, Nick. First and foremost, as always, señor, ¿cómo estás? How are you?
Estoy muy bien, Gerardo. I'm doing real good. You know what comes after 3, 4, 5? 6, 7.
Fuck, here we go. So, let look, it's a great place to start. I'm only active on social media as it relates to the business Twitter, at RSD, right? Resource Stock Digest. But of course, you know, by my curiosity and my ADHD brain and my OCD on the other side of stuff, like I naturally go down the rabbit holes from time to time on all this stuff. And I'm looking at silver at $64 and obviously record new highs, record highs in copper, but silver specifically, I'm looking at it and I'm going, damn. I hope it breaks through 67 quickly and I don't have to see that every single day for like a month. I would hate if that's where it consolidated and I had to see this and hear this for a month on my timeline, man. So well done, by the way. Well done. You got young ones. I get it. But yeah, it's record historic times. I think when we started the year, we talked about how we thought the second half of the year was the one that was really going to allow for all the breakouts because we saw gold and silver and copper consolidating and putting in higher lows and new floors and higher floors. And it's played out just absolutely beautifully. Right. And so no, congrats to everybody in the metal space. That's got some exposure. I want to start by saying there's still a lot of value out there. And to that end, 2 points I want to make. I'll pound my chest a little bit. I have a brand new recommendation for subscribers of Junior Resource Monthly. One that I think we will be up triple digits in very short order. And we also, Nick and I, have a brand new uranium, a private placement. It's a private placement we are taking all of. So there is no other way for anyone to secure a position there. And we're going to be offering it exclusively to subscribers of Private Placement Intel. So if you are not a subscriber of Junior Resource Monthly or you are not a subscriber of Private Placement Intel, you should probably get that done if you're going to dabble in the space. It's going to be two profitable picks in pretty short order, not to mention the phenomenal work that Nick does with his other service, and I have another service. But for the sake of simplicity, if you just start with those two, if you're an accredited investor or if you dabble in the metal space, it would serve you well. It would behoove you to get in there and get that done because things are cooking right now. We have a market, folks.
This is it. The waiting is over, as the song goes. And there's only 100 spots left. We did some checking to make sure we were accurate on that. And that is precisely correct. Only 100 seats left. And that's what this thing on Monday is all about. December 15th at 8 p.m. Eastern time, we will be having an event. If you're listening to this live, you'll have a chance to sign up for it starting tomorrow, the 12th, and then all weekend long. We'll be sending out emails so you can get on the list if you're not already on Private Placement Intel. And if you're listening to this once it's published on Monday morning, the 15th, the free version, I'll make sure that there is a link for you to get either on the list or to watch the event itself at 8 p.m. So I don't know how much more you want to talk about that. You said it's a uranium deal. It's with a team that we know really well. We talked a little bit about it last week. Made 800% to 1,000% before with a specialty in ISR or in situ recovery in the United States. This is, I won't say it's a past producing asset, but it's an asset that's had tens of millions of dollars spent on it. I mean, as an underground asset, it was robust enough for the company back then to sink the shaft and nearly begin mining until the bottom fell out of the uranium sector at that time, and then it was abandoned. So there's a historic resource in the ground. It was going to be a conventional uranium asset, conventional uranium mine. And now the theory, and one of the reasons we're providing the capital is to try to prove up that it's ISR amenable or amenable, depending on your pronunciation. And if they can do that, it will be worth much more than the low market cap that it's currently worth right now. And that's why we like the management team, because we had success with them proving up an ISR deposit before. So I don't want to drone on and on and on about it, I guess, but we will sell those last 100 spots. The track record, as you say, speaks for itself. And I was just waiting for the page to load. I was filibustering there. Good Lord, Gerardo, things are on fire. So listen to this. And maybe I'll just share my screen, because I really don't care. Let me do that for 1 second and do a little.
So we could be as transparent as humanly possible, because I know when we presented in New Orleans, someone came up to us and said, "Are those like your top picks?" And we said, no, that's everyone for the last 2 years with this service. And the gentleman really couldn't believe it. And look, it's not just us. I'm not saying it to be braggadocious on Nick's behalf or myself. It's a network of people that we've been fortunate enough to develop over many, many, many years. But it is an effective network, folks, is what I'm trying to preach.
So what you should be seeing on the screen, and let me know if you can't, Gerardo, is every single deal we've done since the beginning of 2024. What you'll notice is that the first thing you should notice is that there's many triple digit winners. The second thing you should notice is that there's a quadruple digit winner. The third thing you should notice is that there's only one single loser. And then I keep this little number down here that
is there a way to make that bigger, Nick? Sorry to interrupt.
I'm highlighting now. I can maybe try to zoom in a little bit.
If you could zoom in, just because I can see you and myself, and I want the good folks at home to get their money's worth here.
Yep. And in post, I think it'll be bigger anyway. But this number down here, this 3.67, that is the average open winner. I think there's 46 positions in there. If you learned anything in grade school or middle school, you know you need to move that decimal point over two places. And what you would derive from that is that the average open winner is up 367%. So, and that track record goes back. There's some legacy positions in there, companies like Hannon and Revival that we financed back in 2017, 2018 that, by the way, you know, Hannon's been a quadruple digit winner as well, from 10 cent financing to over a dollar. So
that's pre-discovery. They haven't even hit, folks.
Correct. So I guess enough salesmanship. Try to get to the event on Monday night. We will sell out the rest of those spots. What'll happen after that is then there'll be a wait list and the price will go up. So people typically don't give up those spots after they get on. No. And if they do, we'll offer them on a first come, first serve basis. But hopefully it doesn't have to come to that for you, and you get on that list and take advantage of not just private placement intel, but this uranium deal that we'll be offering starting Monday morning, December
15th. Yeah. One last, just a little bit of salesmanship, but I'm selling it because we believe in it and the track record's there. And frankly, Nick and I have a 2026 where we're going to hit the ground running, right? But this is the time, folks. If whatever amount of capital you have, we just had a Fed that cut 25 basis points with silver at all-time highs, with copper at all-time highs, with gold at 4,200, with the dollar index below 100. There was an announcement today that this administration, President Trump, wants to provide billions and billions in tax breaks for corporations, people like Nick and myself that co-own several companies. We will be able to take deductions retroactively. Catch that. Retroactively. So we'll be able to go back a couple of years and just expense some stuff, right? Very bullish for asset owners, very bullish for Mr. Trump's friends and those like-minded individuals of, again, now I'm no hypocrite here. I'll take the tax benefit. But what I'm trying to explain is it's rigged, y'all. It's completely rigged. It's so rigged that JP Morgan went from being the longest silver short to now being long 750 million or something like that. It's a part of the reason why silver's run up as violently as it's run up, because you had a long time short position come off and turn itself into a long term long position. Silver's headed much higher. The metals are headed much higher. Assets are headed much higher. Anyone that is on the lower end of the income scale, and the lower end now means, 90% of America, isn't going to get to participate meaningfully or benefit from these tax benefits and these retroactive tax deductions that, again, people like Nick and myself are going to be able to do. So the way that you can even that up a little bit and put some stuff in your favor is by getting in a market where you have tailwinds, you have record high prices. Find yourself, and it doesn't have to be Nick or myself, find yourself a newsletter writer whose style you understand, whose investing rationale or thesis makes sense to you. Do a little due diligence and you know, instead of a couple of hours on social media or TikTok, maybe spend a couple of hours in the resource space, because fortunes are being made right now, folks. I just got off a webinar for a company that was private, that was bought out and is now in a public vehicle. And, you know, that was an immediate 200% win for me from a check I wrote 2 months ago. That's the velocity of the moves that's happening in the markets right now. So just get involved, y'all, whether you have $5,000, $10,000, $100,000, whatever that amount of capital that you can let play in the market for a little bit is, now is absolutely the time to, at the very least, start paying attention to these moves and see who knows what they're talking about and look up track records and you know, place your bets accordingly. That's my rant on the Fed. I don't want to get into the Fed again because, you know how I feel about that. It's good for the rich and everybody else. Fend for yourself. Have fun staying poor.
I will. I'll talk about the Fed a little bit. I was saying something in the kitchen last night. I forget what exactly I was saying. I don't know if it was quantitative easing or Federal Reserve or something. And my daughter was like, "What is that?" And I was half joking, but we were eating a snack before going to basketball practice, and I started telling her about the creature from Jekyll Island and the Christmas Eve vote over 100 years ago to implement this, and why it's become a trap for the middle class, and you know, a little bit tongue in cheek, but certainly true, even if she doesn't understand it quite yet. And look, you said we just got a quarter point cut from the Fed. Some people thought that wasn't going to happen. It was being priced in over 90% by the market, even though just a month or two ago, it was only at a 30 or 40, 50% chance. That turned around quite quickly under the cover of the layoffs, which I'm sure you've seen people announce. And then the inflation, which is something I wanted to talk about, you know, this inflation is technically cooling. And this harkens back to a topic I've been talking about for a couple of weeks now, being able to separate the economy and the pain of the middle class and those that don't benefit it from what the algorithms see and what the market wants and the dynamics of the algorithms, right? So the foundational profits issue will be out tomorrow. And I spend a lot of time breaking down the CPI, looking at the components of the CPI. And some of those biggest inputs, you know, the largest input to the CPI is housing, right? There's some 35 to 45% of the CPI. And if you just Google, and they do that by rent prices, by the way, they don't do that by home prices, because that's an investment and the rent is a consumption. So if you just Google rent prices, you will see that rent prices are falling. They are coming down. Now, are they much higher than they were pre-pandemic? And are they a large portion of people's income and unaffordable for many? Yes. Yeah. Is the rate of change going down? And that's what the algorithms care about? And
also,
that's
yes.
What make also yes. And that's what makes the algorithms buy? Also yes. And then the same thing with transportation, which I've talked about oil on this podcast, and oil actually doesn't go into the CPI either. It goes into the PPI. But what does go into the CPI is gasoline prices and diesel prices. And if you were to pull up a chart of those, which you'll see in tomorrow's issue from the Energy Department, you'll see that those have been coming down and to the right largely on a trend line for the past 3 years. Same question. Is gas and diesel still expensive? Yeah. Is it still a large part of a people's budget that eats into the food they can put on the table and the rent that they can pay? Absolutely, yes. But are the prices and rate of change terms coming down? And that's what gets fed into the algorithm and makes the stocks go to all-time highs? Absolutely, yes. And so, look, I get that prices are high, and I get that it's tough for a lot of people, but that's not what the Fed looks at. The Fed looks at the PPI, the CPI, and those inputs to it. And when you've got layoffs and when you've got inflation that's coming down, it gives them the cover to cut rates. And look, you're going to get more next year. Mr. Powell is out in May. You'll get a lapdog or a loyalist or whatever you want to call it in the Fed chair next year that I'm sure is going to do Trump's bidding and Get the rates down further. There's a lot of ways you could go from there that fans the flames of precious metals with the interest rates coming down, the bond yields that typically compete against the precious metals. When they're lower, the precious metals can go higher. It's no surprise, or shouldn't have been a secret, that when Jerome started talking yesterday, silver went to $64, right? And I'm going to forget some of the things I want to talk about, but the dollar is softening as well. Let me talk about QE, and then let me write a note so I don't forget. They started QE back up. They started QE back up again. So, I don't know what that is. Hopefully it's not too bad. But they started QE again. They're listening. They want to cut my mic. They started buying T-bills, essentially, again, expanding the balance sheet, right?
Just $40 billion. That's in a month, it. For right. a month.
You know, cowbell, like we were talking about last week. And sorry, now I'm ranting and losing my breath a little bit. I got this bronchial tube thing going on. But what happens to the DXY, right? When you and I were in New Orleans, I had a chart of the dollar, and I had written Trump in his first term, and then I had written Trump going downward, down to the right for this term as well. And then here we are. The DXY went up to 100 a couple of weeks ago and has just done an about face, immediately back down to 98 with likely a little bit of softness ahead. And so back to your point about things cooking and a great market for the metals, we're entering the next phase now. And then this is the last thing I'll say before we can move on. You've got silver now outperforming gold. You've got juniors now outperforming producers. If you look at a chart of the GDXJ versus the GDX for the last month, and you've got other metals joining the party in a big way. Like if you look at a year-to-date chart, a year that's quickly coming to an end of silver, platinum, palladium, and gold, you'll see that all three of those first metals are now higher than gold is year-to-date. So some catch-up for these other metals to have, and a lot more upside, I think, for the junior end of the spectrum. And we'll talk more about that in the premium portfolio section.
Yeah, wonderfully said. Couldn't agree with you more. And metals like tin are at, you know, multi-year highs. And so it's across the board, folks. And I'll say one last thing. There is still, well, I'll say a couple of more things. One, oil prices coming down and energy being cheaper. That doesn't even include the tankers that were hijacking over in Venezuela and keeping all the oil. So energy probably gets a little bit cheaper here in the near term. Two, I hope that the rate of change that you talked about, you know, headed to the downside and things getting cheaper applies to lap dances, because those are officially $30 a pop now. Inflation finally caught up with the guys and gals over there. So let's hope the rate of change that they're paying as much attention to that as they were to the inflation when the inflation hit. And the last point on a serious note that I want to make is there is still a lot of value in the explorers that have yet to make the discovery or yet to announce a discovery, with teams in place. Like the recommendation I'm going to make tomorrow is actually, it's a company that's got 3 million gold ounces already. It's one of the most undervalued deposits in North America. It lacked the financial capital and the human capital that it takes to make the market believe that they could build it, grow it, and advance it. And the team they brought on, that's exactly what they do. They have access to all the institutional money that you could want. They have the know-how, they have the engineers, they have, you know, everything you need to get that project to be a standalone 5 million ounce gold project, open pittable in North America, with a market cap of $45-50 million. That's the kind of stuff that I'm looking at. That's a deposit that can sell for $500 million in the next couple of years, especially in this market. And so when Nick and I are looking at companies, and we look at different, you know, we play in similar sandboxes, and then, you know, Nick's got his own, and then I'm exclusively the junior resource space. But when we're looking at similar companies, that's what we're looking for: scale, grade, jurisdiction, the people, the structure, right? And in this case, the structure isn't the best, but they'll roll that back eventually. But everything else checks the boxes. So there's still a lot of value. Metals are headed higher. The explorers are catching a bid and getting rewarded for discoveries. Those that have yet to make it, they're catching a slight bid, but get ahead of that market. Get ahead of the discovery. That's where the real money is made. And so hopefully we can continue to bring those names to you here over the next several months and in all of 2026.
You know else? Who else is looking at those things to evaluate gold production and gold royalty companies is the crypto companies of the world, the large stable companies of the world. I'd be remiss if I didn't mention that We've talked about this for a while, going back to my saying about, you know, crypto soldiers training for the gold army. You're now seeing that and have seen that for the past 6 months as Tether comes in and takes stakes in companies like Elemental and, yeah. and Metalla. And then this morning, there was another announcement with a company we're involved with that they're buying shares of not Tether, but another yeah. sort of crypto adjacent institutional entity, right, to the tune of over $10 million. So yeah. These crypto folks are deploying capital into the gold space. And it was easy to sort of see the parallels. I've long said
you caught it early.
you don't need to be Bitcoin or gold. Like, you guys talk about the same things. You talk about the limited amount of Bitcoin that can be mined. Well, there's a limited amount of gold that can be mined. You talk about the counterparty risk and how Bitcoin doesn't have that, although it sort of does if the grid goes down, but gold doesn't have a counterparty risk, right? You talk about fiat currencies and money printing, which we just talked about with rate yep. cuts and quantitative easing. And that benefits gold as well as we just discussed. And so that's happening in a real way. And then the last thing before we change topics is you mentioned tin. And so I'll mention Tim, who was behind the counter. I have on my calendar, and he reminded me 10 years behind the camera at this point. Today is his higher anniversary, and that's the tin anniversary. So I was telling him tin is going up, and we got a company drilling for that as well.
Well done. Well done. Well done on all fronts. Tim, congratulations. Tim is our audio video whiz who makes us sound and look a whole heck of a lot better than we do if you've ever conversed with us in person. We got to talk copper. I mean, I know silver's getting all the credit because of the velocity of the move, which has been nothing short of spectacular. But we got to talk. By the way, I think silver overshoots to like the 72 level. What do you think? I mean, there is no overhead resistance at this point.
I mean, I was surprised to see it to 64. When I looked today, I did the side eye emoji. I was like, oh shit, it's at $64. Like, yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's no overhead resistance and it's going to generate a lot of headlines now. So I'll give you my typical trees don't grow to the sky. Maybe we'll get to 6.7, 6.7, Gerardo. I know you don't want that, but
it was coming. I hope we don't consolidate there.
it's pretty easy to see $70 at this point, right? And look, I don't say things like that lightly. Like,
no, Gerardo, Nick is not the optimist of the group. He's the cautious one.
I was telling you last week that I was feeling pretty good. And I was also telling you last week that it could be just a week or two before silver is trading with a six handle. And here it is, the subsequent podcast a week later, and then we're at 64. So that's what you were saying about, you know, we're getting into this next phase of the bull market, that things are happening quickly. And that can mean the underlying commodity price ascension as well. I can just keep going on copper if you want.
It's at least
3 month highs. Yeah, for sure. At $5.48 a pound. I ran through the fundamentals last week. Don't have to do that again. I don't know what else to say about that. The supplies have come offline this year. AI and data centers continue to be a huge driving force in the economy. There's been a stockpiling of copper in the U.S. that's led to shortfalls elsewhere, and that's why you're seeing the price go up, not just in the U.S., but globally. And then I guess the one thing I saw in the past week since the last podcast is, you know, major banks now calling for, they talk about tons, right? So it was like at 11,500 a ton, 11,600 a ton, which was an all-time high. Yep. And the Bloomberg article I was reading had banks calling for the need for over $12,000 a yep. ton in 2026 to bring that new supply online. So, you look around the space or the sector, and you can see that being reflected in the underlying equities, whether it's the producers or the developers and explorers. They're all starting to catch a bid at this point. And that's what you say, Gerardo. It's time to get in there because these things are starting to move.
They're moving. I had something to say and it'll come back to me here. Sure. Oh, that's what I was going to say. You have Elon Musk and Larry Ellison are having a pissing contest about putting data centers in space. Like, do we think any of that is fact? I say that jokingly, but I say that to make another point. Like, does anyone think that's factored into any of the analyst models on copper demand? The answer is an absolute no. None of that is factored in. A lot of these data centers that are being kicked around and starting to get finances and started to be built aren't factored into the analyst models. So if you think $5 copper or something, Wait till you see $7, $8, $9 copper over the next couple of years. And the same people that can't see that are the same people that couldn't see $64 silver. And yet here we are today. We started the year with a two handle, a $28 handle, if I'm not mistaken. And here we are just less than a year later, sitting at 64 and likely making a run to 70 before the year's out. I think, you know, it's psychologically traders like to take things to where, you know, the hockey puck is going. I think 70 is absolutely where the hockey puck is going. I think it's going to happen quickly too. Might not make it out of next week without a 70 handle.
Yeah. Just one more thing on that. And we keep saying that, but I told you I was going to forget stuff. That's why I was taking notes. But the volatility index has come down significantly. You'll remember in October and November where we had a mini correction in the S&P and we had a correction in the metals prices and people were worried, you know, always talking about recession and yep. things like that. The VIX was quite elevated then. What happens as the VIX comes down is that other things can run higher. They get wider spreads to the upside. And so you're seeing that now. The VIX has come all the way back down. I think it's, you know, it's certainly below 20. I think it's 17 or 18 or something like that. And so you can see things go up much higher when there's less volatility in the space. And yeah, you're definitely seeing that right now.
Yeah, no, a lot to like. The sectors right now that present the best value, in my opinion, guys and gals, lithium and uranium, for the simple fact that they haven't enjoyed you know, that hockey stick move as it relates to the underlying commodity. And so if you're looking for value and you don't want to be in the precious metal space, or you don't want to be establishing a large aggressive position in companies that haven't made the discovery, right? Because it's higher risk, naturally, higher reward, also naturally, then the uranium and the lithium sector offers some really, really compelling value, which again is why I'm so damn excited about this opportunity that we have here on the 15th for subscribers of PPI. That should be a fun one, and another triple digit win in very short order for the portfolio.
And this is how fast stuff is moving. I just said the VIX was at 17 or 18, and I was correct, but I was quoting the number from the open, Gerardo. Sorry for doing that. It's now below 15 after the trading day today. So the VIX just absolutely cratering. It's at 14.85. That's the lowest it's been since the middle of September, right? So volatility now erased from the equation. And you mentioned lithium and uranium. Those are things that are related to energy, which I was telling you earlier was soft in terms of gas and diesel. And so that is truly a contrarian space. The energy complex is, you know, be a contrarian or be a victim, but that's the next thing to buy. You'll see Rick Rue out there giving talks. I think I saw a headline on an interview of his this week that said half his portfolio is in oil and gas or something like that. So the energy trade is the next one for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Let's, I don't have anything else non-societal, but there are some things that we let go last week that I want to touch on that, fucking unfortunately we're compounded by new announcements, right? So we had wanted to talk about the nasty, incestuous, rapish, molestish relationship between Jeffrey Epstein and Larry Summers, right? So when we talk about the Epstein list that's supposed to be released on the 19th, y'all hold your breath, right? Whether or not we ever get a formal list, we have a lot of names, folks, that are in the public domain. Julie Brown from the Miami Herald, I believe, has done extensive and phenomenal work over the past decade and was spot on when it was happening. One of the few people speaking truth to power, right, about the raping and molesting of these girls. Larry Summers is and was the head of one of the most elite educational institutions on the planet. He was allowed to maintain that position after the allegations and documentation was made and provided and publicly. And man, if you have little boys and you have little girls out there, just please watch over those babies, man, because it's nasty out here. And you know, I listen to the Trump administration talk every day about law and order and how, you know, if you don't have your papers, then we're going to tackle you and send you to some foreign country and deport you. And doesn't matter if you haven't committed any other crimes other than being here undocumented. It doesn't matter if you're contributing, right? And I just sit here, Nick, and I go, how come we can't use those resources towards, yes, the rapists and yes, the violent offenders that are not producing and contributing to our beautiful country? Why do we have to do it the way that we're doing it? And then I see stuff like the Summers debacle and the cover up there. And then I see the $300 million priest rape settlement in New York that was announced this week. And I'm just looking and I'm going, all of the institutions that are supposed to provide protection and oversight for parents and kids when the parents can't or won't are not only not providing the oversight, they're oftentimes complicit in committing the crimes alongside the predators against our kids.
Or are the predators
themselves?
It
sickens me to no end how perverted and nasty the institutions that are in cahoots with these people continue to be. And I don't know why I continue to be surprised. Maybe it's the optimist human in me. I guess I would think that, you know, in the internet era, in the era of cameras everywhere, in the era of microphones everywhere, in the era where, you know, whatever video you want, you could probably pay someone enough to hack it and get it for you. We can't do the basic stuff, the common decency human stuff. And again, it's the institutions that are facilitating this. They're not just covering it up. Oftentimes, they're facilitating it. And I'll stop there before I get myself in trouble.
I'll pick up the baton. The Larry Summers stuff we didn't get to. And, you know, at first with this administration, it was a hoax and it didn't exist. And then they were going to release them. You remember Pam Bondi with the files on the desk, which never materialized. And now finally, thanks to Massey and a few others, they're supposed to release them, as you say. I'm interested to see how heavily redacted they are. But nonetheless, since we've talked about it last, and we need to keep talking about it, that's sort of the first thing. I know it's tiresome for some people, and I know some people would rather do the ostrich thing and put their heads in the sand, but you got to just keep bringing it up, keep it in the forefront, and know that these people who run these institutions not only don't have your best interest in mind and heart, but are actively undermining them, and in some cases actively harming the next generation of Americans. You mentioned Larry Summers and Harvard, and being the president of that institution, he was still a professor long after he was the president, right? I think they called him, it's like the highest tenure you can have at Harvard. I forget the title. Anyway, it doesn't matter the title, but it's like the highest tenure you can have at Harvard. Yeah, after all the Epstein came out. And then recently we got the emails and some more information that that's where the gentleman, I shouldn't even call him a gentleman, Larry Summers, spent his honeymoon, was on Epstein Island. And then you got the correspondences between the two, where Larry was seeking dating advice from Mr. Epstein and was complaining about, you know, not being able to date colleagues and talk to colleagues a certain way. So that's the head of your most venerable institution, folks. And
by colleagues, he meant students, just to be clear.
That's crazy. And now we're starting to see the pictures and stuff come out. So hopefully stuff continues to come out. I saw a great tweet by Sal, the agorist on Twitter, that said, how many Somalis and Venezuelans visited Epstein Island, right? And of course, there's some obfuscation going on as we try to shine the spotlight away from that Epstein investigation and the release of the files and on to other things. And now I see we're trying to undergo some regime change, which Dick Cheney just died. I thought we were over the regime change stuff. But here we are yet again, literally, Gerardo, a quarter of a century later. And it's not just Trump. I saw Mr. Schumer talking
no
fucking head on TV this week, talking about how he was undecided about regime change in Venezuela, which, by the way, means that he's going to support it, just like he supported the invasion of Iraq. Getting old. I've seen all this before. I've seen this movie, right, Gerardo? So it's almost like it's a fourth turning, and all the trust is being eroded from these institutions, and we're seeing that the emperors, in this case, sometimes literally have no fucking clothes. And then, you mentioned the $300. It's not even a settlement. So this is in New York City, and Cardinal Timothy Dolan is the one that's in charge of this operation. That's like the proposed starting point for mediation for some 1,300 to 1,700. That's 1,700 folks who have come forward and said that they were a victim of priest abuse. If you read the entire New York Times article, which I spent some time scrolling through today, you would see that there was an announcement the same day of some $200 million in the New Orleans parish. And this is dwarfed only by the settlement a couple of years ago in Los Angeles, which was similar hundreds of millions. So we'll see what the final number is. But the bone I really had to pick, in addition to priest raping kids, is the way Cardinal Dolan, and this is the guy who did the blessing at Trump's inauguration, by the way, Spiritus Sanctum, frames it and talks about it, how it's in the past. And these past victims and how we handled it previously. And it's like, no, man, this is ongoing. Like, there's still people coming forward. The Catholic institution as a church is still obfuscating, delaying, playing the moving cup game, moving priests that are currently being accused to other dioceses. And it's happening in real time. So here's a Spokane tie-in. My wife was telling me the other day that we've had some new families come to our school. We sent our kids to a Catholic school, even though I'm a non-practicing Catholic and we don't go to church. We like the Catholic education. And she was saying, we've got some new families because at one of the other schools in Spokane, the Catholic schools called All Saints, a priest has recently been accused of sexual coercion, sleeping with parishioners, etc. And so a couple of things there. It's not in the past, Cardinal Dolan. Like, this is still happening, and you're still hiding behind stuff. So they use canon law, the church law, to try to protect these priests. They suspend him, right? This gentleman here in Spokane, but he still gets pay. It's like the police in that way, right? And while he's suspended, there's pictures of on Facebook of him conducting mass at other parishes. And then, and this is where it gets to the people, because the people really need to point it out. He's got the support of many people still in his parish. No way this gentleman could do this. He's a good guy, this, that, and the other thing. And it's like, look, man, if you want to be a priest and you want to take a vow of the celibacy, then that's the way it needs to be. And we got to get these people out of there. In this case, the one I'm talking about, they hired an accounting firm to go through, and I'll end on a lighthearted note, maybe not that lighthearted, but to go through the records, right? The financial records. What was this gentleman doing with the money? And they found all sorts of inconsistencies and receipts, including one where he was buying thong underwear and filing them as liturgical costs, like for sacramental costs, right? And the accountant, and this is where it gets really bad, sort of like the voters that keep voting for these fuckers on the political side. The accountant is like, oh, it's a misunderstanding. It's like, the fuck it is, man. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah.
Oh, the best part, and it goes back to the shuffling around in the cup game. This gentleman, same gentleman I've been talking about for the past two minutes, was transferred here to Spokane from another diocese in Washington where he was sleeping with a parishioner's wife.
Good old fashioned religious, get you into heaven values, right, folks? Mm. Man.
And so say your three Hail Marys is what I said. That's what there the Catholic penance says.
There you go.
Anyway.
Yeah. Let's switch back up. There's some good reader questions that I wanted to take. One specifically about a share consolidation that I thought would be a good, because it ties into a private placement that we did maybe 5 months ago or 6 months ago, if I'm not mistaken. Do we want to read that one out loud there, Nick? And I'm happy to take it.
Sure. And yeah, sure. And then we'll get into the premium portfolio section. We'll get the questions for free like we did last week.
You got it.
It says, hi, Nick Girardo. I was disappointed to see right after the finance for Vizsla, and in this case, they're talking about Vizsla Copper. I had to check. Right. For Vizsla Copper, they did, they up and did a 10-for-1 split. Just a slight correction there. This is not a split. This is the opposite. This is a consolidation.
Correct.
A 10-for-1 consolidation. I had 100,000 shares and the next morning had 10,000 shares worth considerably less. It doesn't seem fair that they lobby for a financing and get the money and then do this to the shareholders. I guess they don't want them diluted, but they were at 205 when they split. Why would they have to do a 10-to-1 when the shares were up that much? We raised money at 50 cents post consolidation. Maybe that's your notes.
Yeah, that's my note right there.
With 90 cent forward.
Yep. Yeah. So a couple of things there. One, thank you for thank you for the note. I appreciate you writing in. So when there's a share consolidation, if you're a structure guy like myself or like Nick, you like share consolidations. It shakes out a lot of weak hands. It makes it to where the shares are in the hands of a concentrated few as opposed to just spread out everywhere. And so I actually am a fan of share consolidations as long as the management team is going to continue to add value. In regards to losing value, yes, your 100,000 shares became 10,000 shares, but your 100,000 shares at 10 cents now became 10,000 shares at $1, right? And I'm just using
Correct.
round numbers just to kind of keep it simple. So while yes, the stock was trading at 11 cents, well, now the stock trades at 118. So you do have a tenth the amount of those shares, but those shares are worth 10 times what they were because of the consolidation. So on a cash on cash basis, you didn't lose anything. You simply had your shares consolidated, and on the value side of it, you were compensated to make sure that you didn't lose any value on those shares. Now, my point was, we helped raise money for Vizsla Copper at the 50-cent level post consolidation, and with the full warrant at 90 cents. I want to say that was like 4 or 5 months ago. Shares are sitting at a buck 18. We're sitting up, some 120% on that position with that money fully in, with that warrant fully in the money. So, look, people either love or they hate share consolidations. Do I like having a position where I have 1 million shares or 100,000 shares because I like round numbers? Absolutely. Do I prefer to have that than 10,000 or 100,000? Of course, absolutely. But at the end of the day, what we want are management teams that are using structure and consolidations to drive value. And in this case, they were, yeah, their share account was getting bloated. They needed to consolidate. This opens the door as well for possibly, a New York exchange, an NYSE listing in the future if they can meet certain thresholds. So hopefully that answers your question. You didn't lose anything value-wise. You do have less shares, but those shares individually are worth 10 times what they were, offsetting the loss of the shares, right?
Excellent.
Beautiful.
Shout out to Mark for the question. One
Thank
more.
you,
You are
Mark.
you were on top of it today, Gerardo. Look at you.
Every now and then, Nick, every now and then.
This is says hi, Nick and Gerardo. I just got info on Meteoric Resources, another Aussie stock in the rare earth domain in South America. I guess it came via Motley Fool, he says. They are using FJH extraction, which you kindly put there is flash jewel heating. It's a process that I know about being a shareholder of Metallium for quite some time. I would like your comments on Meteoric with respect to the US's need for rare earth metals. Thank you, Graham.
So yeah, listen, I do what I often do with almost everything, right? We joke in my house, well, I'm not handy at all. When the babies were babies, the wife would build the cribs and I would just hand her the wrenches and whatever she asked for, right? I just am not wired that way. My father would be so frustrated trying to teach me how to change a tire or how to change the oil on a car. It just doesn't make sense for me. Other things do make sense for me. There's like five of them in the world that I do well, and the rest, my wife and the universe has been kind enough to kind of let me skate by. This is one of those questions where I'm familiar with rare earths because we did very well in that last bull cycle. Nick has done very, very well in this cycle. But when it comes to the extraction and the processing and all of that, there are people much, much smarter than I. So what I did for you was I reached out to someone that I consider a part of our network, Mr. Jody DeRouge, who is, an absolute expert in this space and knows this stuff very well, and who I knew happened to be a shareholder of Meteoric. So this was his response, and it would be a far more educated response than anything that I could give you. And what he responded, and he was, I mean, he responded within minutes of me asking him the question. So thank you, Mr. DeRouge. He said, "I am a Meteoric shareholder, having been introduced by Tolga. My understanding is the FJH process, flash jewel heating, superheats the material, breaking down the waste and concentrating the REEs, the rare earths, into a solid. This seems to be far superior to the traditional solvent extraction, which uses lots of energy and creates a ton of waste. Keep in mind, this is a downstream beneficiation step after the REEs are first extracted from the clays via simple leaching. Once their permits are in place, seems to be the challenge at the moment, but the stock should re-rate after this happens. This will likely be one of the best, quickest market REE stories, given its simplicity. Plus, as the source rock was originally an alkaline intrusive, meaning they have quite a favorable distribution with respect to the magnet REEs. I hope that helps. Thank you, Mr. DeRouge, for the quick response and the insight there. I hope that answers the question. Clearly, he believes once permits are in place, the stock goes higher. The need in the U.S. is going to continue to be, and in North America in general, is going to continue to be substantial and will not be met anytime soon, any and all. And it's why the administration is in Australia talking to critical metals companies, looking for other supply. They understand that all of the recycling and investment and fast track permitting that they're doing here in the US, it's going to take a while to bring a product online and get that going. So it's why we're in Australia talking to friendly countries, seeing if we can secure stable sources of it. And look, I think those companies continue to do very, very well, especially the ones that can figure out what's often the most challenging aspect of rare earth deposits, and that's extracting the minerals, right? So I hope that answers the question. I hope that helps.
Wonderful.
Awesome. All right.
I don't know anything about the company other than it was at the Rule Symposium last year, which must mean he is or was a shareholder. But other than that, I don't know much. So thank you, Jody, for the explanation.
On to
premium portfolio picks.
Let's get to it. Let's go. I am Gerardo Del Real along with Mr. Nick Hodge. This was the 345th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. We hope you found some information insightful. Have a beautiful, beautiful, beautiful rest of your week, folks, and we will see you next week. Send us off, Nick.
You won't see me next week. You will have Mr. Chris Curl, but I wish you a good one, and I'll catch you after that. Have a good one. See ya.